So before we get into all things COVID here this morning, just in terms of the marathon, I genuinely do worry about the kind of physical stress that's put on the human body for something like this. I know thousands of people do it all of the time, but I mean, unless they take the proper precautions, it really can be dangerous for people.
Oh, absolutely. It's really interesting for our timing of our marathon. If you think about these highly trained individuals, they train through the summer when it's the hottest time ever. And then we get to this time and you expect a kind of a reprieve with some of the weather. And obviously, it doesn't look like we're going to get that today. So they'll be running, if I'm not mistaken, it's going to probably be in the low 80s by the time they're about midway through here. So certainly, if you have world-class athletes, those guys that finish in the top 50, but you got to remember the tens of thousands behind them are essentially weekend warriors and not professional athletes. And it's a lot of strain. It's a lot of strain on the heart, the lungs, and really it's that whole sense of dehydration. When you're running and on your controlled method, you know when to get water. Certainly, they have enough hydration stations out there. So hopefully everybody understands what they're doing and watches their body, and their body will tell them actually when they're getting in some distress.
Yeah, when we used to broadcast out of the window at Tribune Tower, and we'd see the runners after they were finished all wrapped in their aluminum towel, you know, kind of a towel that they gave them, made out of aluminum to retain the body heat. They just looked like they were in such incredible distress. What are the kinds of things that the runners should be doing after the race today and tomorrow to kind of minimize any negative effects there may be?
Yeah, you know, you make a good point. People think that the race is over, you know, this afternoon, but really the effects of that go well into the next couple of days. You know, you have to make sure that you stay hydrated. You think, oh, I'm back to hydrated, I'm okay. Your body also is doing a lot of, I don't want to say damage, but certainly inflammation in your muscles. And we start to look at muscle breakdown, and we start to look at increased protein in the body. So we want to make sure certainly that we stay hydrated these next couple of days, continue to stretch the next couple of days. Although the race may be over, all these runners who have been training for this understand the side effects of going that full 26 miles and what it does those next couple of days. Certainly the retention of the body heat and the temperature regulation, that occurs after just a couple hours after the race, but certainly you want to make sure that you're going to stay hydrated these next couple of days so we don't end up with kidney problems, which would be, I don't want to say devastating, but certainly impactful.
Yeah, very definitely. And as you say, the professional runners, you know, they know how to deal with this. The weekend warriors, as you so perfectly call them, those are the ones that I worry about, that, you know, they go out, they want to do a marathon. They've never done it before. You know, hopefully they've trained before they get into it. But, you know, we always forget about everything that needs to be done afterwards. So, you know, we wish them all the best with that. It's been an interesting week of COVID news. I don't want to say good news exactly, but it seems like numbers are continuing to go down. We've seen that before. And I always keep thinking, you know, is this are we genuinely headed in a good direction permanently, or are we, you know, headed for one of those dips like we've had in the past, thinking that everything's fine when really it could shoot back up again?
Yeah, Dean, you hit it right on the head. You know, it's okay, you guys. We are heading in a good direction. Hospitalizations are down. Deaths are still kind of up there, but that's a lagging indicator. In other words, as we see the hospitalizations go down, a couple weeks later, we'll start to see deaths go down. You know, Illinois hit that sobering 25,000 deaths in the state. So just a reminder that this is not completely over. But you make a good point. We are seem to be turning. More vaccinations are going on. The southern part of the state still lagging, but certainly the northern part of the state is doing so much better.
I read reports about things that are going on in Israel where it seems like their fight against COVID is so much more aggressive than ours. The latest is that there are now reports of young kids getting booster shots already, something that's not happening here in many cases. Kids not even getting their first vaccinations yet. that people who may have gotten Pfizer are getting Moderna vaccines. There's a lot of flipping and flopping and things that are not happening here. Can you talk about that a little bit? Should we be more aggressive? Should we be more open with the transferal, I guess you might say, of booster shots, one from the other?
Yeah, you make a very good point that we're all looking at right now. Israel is kind of the leader in the world here. Not only are they more aggressive, much more organized as well. So their information basis is excellent. So if you've really followed them, they have high vaccination rates. They've done high booster rates. And like you said, much more aggressive even in the younger age of getting boosters there. Is the United States a little bit more conservative with the FDA and CDC? Probably. And I think they're also looking at the worldwide impact. If all of us in the United States started to use boosters, are we really shortchanging other parts of the world? This week and next week will be the most telling as both Moderna and Johnson & Johnson are reviewed.
When do you think we might be hearing information about boosters for Johnson & Johnson and Moderna?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting 2 weeks. And then that's just the medical geek side of me saying that, because you have the FDA advisory committee meeting on Thursday and Friday of this week. And if you remember what happened last time, they made a recommendation for boosters, and then the CDC, or they made a recommendation for no boosters. And then the CDC kind of backed off of that and said yes for boosters, especially for teachers, healthcare workers, jail workers. So it'll be interesting to see now if J&J, Moderna, and Pfizer would now all be approved by the advisory council, is the CDC going to say, yes, we'll move forward now? Because a lot of the confusion may be, you know, dismantled a little bit because there's so much confusion out there.
Let me take a break, and then we'll get to your questions and calls for Dr. Kevin Most, 312-981-7200. Before we take the break, though, Doctor, one more note on the marathon. 708 texts in, keep in mind that many of the runners today will be going to Boston for the Boston Marathon tomorrow. What kind of health risks are involved in that, doing two marathons in 2 days?
You know, those are the guys that I read. There was a story in the Tribune this morning about, I believe it was a veteran, a U.S. military veteran that's going to do that. Boy, those are the ones that you hope are in unbelievably good shape and have, you know, this is their multi-marathon. They've run an ultra marathon in the past. The individual who this is their first, second, third marathon, boy, that's not something that I would recommend. And especially Boston, a much hillier course than Chicago, which is, you know, very obviously a very flat course.
And somebody texts in, what about a 65-year-old man who will be doing two marathons back-to-back? Does age make a factor? Or again, does that have to do with what kind of shape you're in, regardless of your age?
No, age definitely has a factor. Think about the pounding that the knees, hips, and low back are making. You know, as we age, those joints deteriorate. Our low back, obviously the cushions between our vertebrae start to deteriorate. That's why we get shorter as we age later. You know, that's a lot of pounding and a lot of stress on the heart, too. So between the musculoskeletal portion of it as well as his heart portion of it, I wish him well. And I didn't see what the weather's going to be like in Boston, but certainly today, if it gets up into the 80s, it's going to be a stressor on these guys.
Yeah, let's take a break, and when we come back, your questions for Dr. Kevin Most, 312-981-7200 to call in, 312-981-7200 to text. We're back in just a minute. Our segment, which for the year and a half has been all things COVID, today also getting into a few other subjects like the marathon today, and we'll get some questions on that. But, Kevin, we start off with a text question that's come in regarding booster shots. It says here that the original vaccine needed 2 weeks after the second shot to be fully effective. Is there a time for the booster shot to become fully effective?
So it's interesting, you know, as we're going into boosters, we're going back into this uncertainty land, right? We don't know enough about when we'll get to the full immunity after that booster or third shot, because that time hasn't hit yet. But certainly the studies have shown that this is going to bring you back up to that 95% protection rate versus the slippage that we've seen with both Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. But we need to make sure right now, as we're looking at the difference between a booster and a third shot. Although the mechanics are the exact same, the third shot, which is right now approved for everyone immunocompromised, which I classify as over 65. Now, individuals are saying, I went to the pharmacy and asked for my booster, and they told me I didn't qualify yet. And I just remind people, when you go into the pharmacy, ask for your third shot, because that is the population that's being allowed to get the third shot yet. Yeah, at this point, boosters will follow.
Okay. Here's one from 847. If a pregnant mother is vaccinated, does the baby also have the same protection?
Well, it's really interesting. All the studies have shown right now the importance of this happening, that pregnant women get vaccinated for two things. We know that the disease is much less than the side effects from the vaccine. The more important part is that we've actually seen that breast milk for a mother who is breastfeeding after being vaccinated actually pushes immunity towards that child and protects them during that very vulnerable time where we can't have any vaccination. So certainly maternal mothers who are breastfeeding give a lot of protection to their children with antibodies in the breast milk, and they've actually found that that's true with those individuals who got the COVID vaccine as well.
Here is Roy. You are on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Doc, my daughter, she's 20 years old. She had the Moderna shot, and a few days afterwards, she had these big blotches about 3 or 4 inches on the back of her hands. They look like bruises. So about a week later, we took her to the doctor because we didn't know what it was. And the doctor said it probably was from the Moderna shot. So she only had one shot. And the bruising lasted about 3 weeks. And the doctor said, you know, it's up to you whether to take the second shot. So she decided, she was a little afraid not to do it. So our dilemma is, what do we do now? Do we change shots? Do we try going back to the Moderna? We don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, Roy, so there have been reports in women who have some bleeding and clotting disorders with the Moderna vaccine. Very low numbers, but your daughter certainly could have been one of them. With those side effects and that condition, I would say hold off on Moderna. You still have the option for J&J, which is a totally different vaccine. People have to understand the Johnson & Johnson is the adenovirus-mediated one versus the mRNA of Moderna. So with that known side effect, if she hasn't had side effects with any other flu shots in the past, then I would go with the Johnson & Johnson, which will get her protection. She already has some protection, so if she's super hesitant, you know that she's about 60-70% protected right now with just the single shot of Moderna. But if she's going to get a second, and she was my patient, I would recommend Johnson & Johnson if she really wants to, just because of that potential side effect.
Thank you.
Not the Pfizer?
No, Pfizer and Moderna are almost going to be interchangeable, right? They're like the generics, I'll call them. They are almost the exact same, although the study really showed this in Moderna more than it did in Pfizer. So the mix and match study results aren't out yet, but I would say, in better part of safety, go to the adenovirus one versus one where we know she had a side effect.
Okay, Roy, thank you very much for your call. And you've answered this several times, but we're getting so many questions about getting your booster shot with flu shots, with other shots. Many people asking about flu shots and boosters. Some people asking about if it's okay to get a shingle and a booster shot at the same time. What's the story about stacking up on your vaccines at one time?
Yeah, as far as stacking, flu shot and COVID shot, totally fine. 100%. As a matter of fact, as we move forward, I would not be surprised that these two vaccines are going to be placed into one in the future so that we just get one shot in the fall. Not a problem there. The shingles shot, I look at it and say, you know what, postpone that a couple of weeks. A lot of people have a lot of side effects from the shingles shot. Certainly wouldn't want to stack that on top. And really, we're looking for COVID and influenza in a much shorter period of time of protection. In other words, this could happen in a couple of weeks versus shingles, where we're going to get protection for the remainder of our life. So delay the shingles shot, get the COVID and the flu shot now, wait a couple weeks, and then start your shingles series.
Kevin, have a great Sunday today. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Thank you, Kev.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon.